I'm Tommy McNeil. Tens of thousands of protesters gathered on Puerto Rico's largest highway calling for the resignation of the embattled Governor Ricardo Rossello. Monday's protests marked the 10th consecutive day of demonstrations on the island. Reuters' Jahara Juarez has details.
Thousands of Puerto Ricans filled the streets of San Juan Monday in an unrelenting push to force their governor out. The demonstrations come a day after Governor Ricardo Rossello said he will not run for re-election next year, but stopped short of resigning.
To each Puerto Rican man and woman, I have heard you and I hear you today. I have made mistakes and I've asked for forgiveness.
Outside the governor's palace, activists listened on their phones as Rossello gave his speech, which only added fuel to the fire.
Anger is growing in Hong Kong over an attack on pro-democracy protesters by suspected gangsters that left dozens of people injured. A cell phone video on social media shows white-clad assailants alleged to be triad gangsters attacking commuters with pipes and poles at a Hong Kong subway station on Sunday. In Beijing, officials said the Chinese government firmly supports the Hong Kong government in taking all necessary measures to punish the criminals. Beijing also reiterated it firmly opposes any foreign interference and any wanton accusations of Hong Kong's internal affairs. Hospital officials say 45 people were injured in the violence, with one in critical condition. Activists and local politicians accused police on Monday of a slow response to the violence. Find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. As former special counsel Robert Mueller prepares to testify before the House Judiciary Committee and Intelligence Committees on Wednesday, one thing appears to be certain. The veteran prosecutor and former FBI director will not be revealing anything that's not in his final report to Attorney General William Barr. AP correspondent Mary Claire Jelinek reports that Democrats want former special counsel Mueller to testify before Congress to make sure people who have not read the report get a chance to hear the information it contains.
Democrats think that Americans haven't actually read the report, so they really want him there so they can ask him questions and have him explain what his report found. Mueller has said that he's probably not going to go beyond what he actually wrote in the report, but Democrats, to an extent, don't even care. They just want him to explain it and to bring that back into the American consciousness.
As political frenzy builds over one of the most highly anticipated congressional hearings in recent memory, there's a reminder of the key findings of the report and speculate on how members of Congress will try to steer the hearing to their advantage. The United States and Pakistan are jointly seeking a way to end the war in Afghanistan. That's according to U.S. President Trump, speaking alongside Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan in the Oval Office on Monday. The Pakistani Prime Minister declared that this is the closest we've been to peace deals in Afghanistan. There's no military solution there. In the coming days, Khan added that there are hopes of getting the Taliban to speak to the Afghan government. Khan complimented Mr. Trump for his efforts, saying he has forced people to end the war to have a settlement, adding Pakistan has an important role to play as it shares a 2,400-kilometer border with Afghanistan. Trump, during his White House discussion with Khan, declared that if he wanted to win the war in Afghanistan, he could win it in a week. The United States and Iran pushed full steam ahead, each country launching the new round of verbal volleys as military tensions between Tehran and the West rose to new heights Monday. AP Sagar Magani says that President Trump denies Iran's story that has arrested 17 people in the past year for spying for the United States.
An Iranian intelligence official says the recruits were all Iranian nationals arrested over the past months for spying on the Islamic Republic's nuclear and military sites.
That's totally a false story. That's another lie.
The report comes amid rising tensions between the nations over the president pulling the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal. Asked if Washington's closer to a deal or armed conflict, he says Iran doesn't know which way it's going.
That's AP correspondent Sagar Magani reporting. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's finance minister and other treasury officials have been arrested for alleged corruption and fraud.
In fact, they arrest an immediate arraignment before court of the accused persons named below. Henry Kiplaka Dotich, Cabinet Secretary, National Treasury. Kamau Fuge, Principal Secretary, National Treasury.
Nordi Haji is Kenya's Director of Public Prosecution. Zambia's main opposition party welcomes President Lungu's offers to dialogue. Zimbabwe's vice president has been flown to China for an undisclosed illness. And in the Gambia, a military officer under former President Yahya Jammeh says he took part in the murder of journalist Deda Haidara.
When you shot, did you know who you fired at?
I did not know this until the following day when I came to Kombo.
How many bullets did you release?
I shot one.
Your colleagues?
I can't tell how many bullets they shot.
Malik Jata was a member of former President Yahya Jammeh's assassination team. South Sudan leaders are called upon to end sexual violence, and African airline flyers want their government to implement the Yamoussoukro decision. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenya's finance minister, Henry Rotich, his permanent secretary, Kamau Thuge, and 10 other government officials are said to be arraigned in court today, Tuesday, for alleged corruption and fraud related to a multi-million dollar project to build two dams. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's Director of Public Prosecution, Nordin Haji, shocked many yesterday, Monday, when he ordered for the arrest of Treasury Cabinet Secretary Henry Rotich over corruption allegations that hit his ministry during the procurement of funds to build two multi-billion dams in Kenya's Rift Valley region. Speaking in Nairobi, Mr. Haji said he was satisfied that economic crime was committed after he analyzed evidence presented by Director of Criminal Investigation.
In fact, the arrest and immediate arraignment before court of the accused persons named below. Henry Kiplaka Dotich, Cabinet Secretary, National Treasury. Kamau Fuge, Principal Secretary, National Treasury. Failure to comply with applicable procedures and guidelines relating to procurement contrary to Section 45(2)(b) as read with Section 48 of the Anti-Corruption and Economic Crimes Act No. 3 of 2003. Committing an offense of financial misconduct contrary to Section 197(1) OI of the Public Finance Management Act No. 18 of 2012.
The two dams, Kimwarer and Aror, could cost approximately 46 billion Kenya shillings, but the National Treasury negotiated a commercial facility legally increasing the amount to approximately 63 billion Kenya shillings, which is 17 billion Kenya shillings more than the expected amount. Haji, however, says the government had earlier made an advance payment of 19 billion Kenya shillings, of which 4 years later, no construction has commenced.
Of the international nature of these crimes, we realize that we cannot fight corruption on our own, and as a strategy to fighting economic crimes, the Office of the Director of Public Prosecution has prioritized the tracing of proceeds of crime, benefits and instruments of crime, asset confiscation and forfeiture. Consequently, these investigations has been phased. To this end, the ODPP has made several international mutual legal assistance requests to the UK and Italy to assist in financial investigations. Once investigations are complete, more charges will be preferred.
Also wanted persons on Haji's list is an Italian, Paolo Posej, director CMC di Ravenna, Italian-based firm that had a government-to-government agreement on construction of the dams. Earlier, Deputy President William Ruto had defended the allegation, saying that the due procedures were followed in procuring the funds for the dams.
The government has lost 21 billion in Kimwarer and I don't know Aror Dam, which is a flat lie. The money in question is about 7 billion. And for every coin that has been paid, we have a bank guarantee. No money will be lost because we are a responsible government. We have engaged every arm of government to make sure that public resources are safe, and therefore the correct information must be used as we target the fight against corruption.
This year, Kenya was ranked 144 out of 180 by Transparency International Corruption Perception Index. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A Gambian army officer has confessed to taking part in the murder of journalist Dada Haidara. Malik Jata was a former member of former President Yahya Jammeh's assassination team called the Junglers. Jata told Gambia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission on Monday that he and other soldiers participated in the murder of Haidara back in December 2004. As Panderun by reports, Jata's confession coincided with the 25th anniversary of Jammeh's overthrow of Sir Dauda Jawara's government.
15 years after his gruesome murder, details have finally emerged as to how journalist Dada Haidara was ambushed and killed by the Tiro Jammeh's assassin team called the Junglers. Haidara was the former co-proprietor of the Banjul-based Point newspaper. He was murdered on the night of his newspaper's 13th anniversary, back in December 2004. Army official Malik Jata on Monday confessed to taking part in the murder of Haidara. He says he and his colleagues were led by the late Army officer Tumbul Tamba, who pulled up in front of Haidara's car and ordered them to kill the journalists.
When he gave the order, and initially none of us fired. He almost passed the vehicle. I can say the shots came adjacent from the driver. So but he never stopped. He was shouting, shoot, shoot, you better shoot. When we shot, he never stopped. He drove through the streets. Who shot? Myself, Deng, and Manjang. Though I was from the left-hand side down there, from the left-hand side of the vehicle, I came to join Deng. We all really shot, to be honest.
Haidara was killed just outside a police post in Kanife. He was dropping off two of his female staffers when his vehicle came under attack. Though Jata says he did not know at the time that the person he killed was a journalist. He says Haidara's killing came in the wake of an operation to eliminate suspected Gambian rebels from Liberia and were allegedly planning to topple Jammeh's government. SR Fall is the lead counsel for Gambia's DRC.
When you shot, did you know who you fired at?
I did not know this until the following day when I came to Combo.
Did you know at this stage that there were other occupants of that vehicle?
I wouldn't be able to tell even if there were other occupants, because when he said the driver was our point of focus.
How many bullets did you release?
I shot one.
Your colleagues?
I can't tell how many bullets they shot.
Days after the killing of Haidara, Jata took a time off from work to visit his family. That is where he came to know the identity of the person he murdered.
When I came to Combo the following day, I was listening to the news and I picked the information of this particular operation we were run into the night before.
And what information was that?
Was the killing of a journalist by the name of Dada Haidara, who I did not know. I was later made to understand that the former president has condemned it.
He condemned the killing?
Yes, sir.
Jata says he was taken aback by Jammeh's condemnation of Haidara's killing, saying that it was Jammeh who ordered for the journalist's murder. He says he and his co-killers were given an unspecified amount of United States dollars after the killing of Haidara. He says the money came from Jammeh. It was handed over to their commander, the late Tumbul Tamba.
He came with an envelope containing some dollars, and he said to us, this is a token of appreciation from the big man. Big man implies the president.
Did you know for certain he was referring to the president?
Very well. I would be certain that it was from the former president.
Jata has also confessed to taking part in the murder of one Dauda Nyasi. Nyasi used to live in Liberia during the Civil War. He was suspected of being part of a plot to overthrow Jammeh's regime. Nyasi was murdered at the outskirts of the Banjul International Airport. Jata also says Wandonga Mbub was murdered under the directives of Jammeh. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 23rd, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development, UPND, says it welcomes President Edgar Lungu's willingness to meet with UPND leader Hakainde Hichilema. Local media reports quote the president as saying he is ready to meet with the main opposition leader. Hichilema said he is also prepared to meet the president without preconditions. Mr. Hichilema has never accepted the re-election of President Lungu, saying the vote was fraudulent. Charles Kakoma is spokesperson for the UPND.
President Hakainde Hichilema has always been calling for dialogue to resolve the many issues that are affecting this country, Zambia. Yesterday, we heard from the Republican President Edgar Lungu that he wants to meet Hakainde Hichilema. And today, Hakainde Hichilema issued a statement that he is ready to meet him without any conditions. So we hope that President Edgar Lungu is this time around serious about meeting with President Hakainde Hichilema, because in the past he has tended to be very serious over the matter.
But why are you saying he will be serious? He's the president of the entire country. If he chooses to meet an opposition leader who has been opposing everything he does, why should the opposition feel that the president might not be serious about his willingness to meet the opposition leader?
Yes, because in the past 1 year, 2 years, Edgar Lungu failed to meet Hakainde Hichilema under the Commonwealth-led dialogue process. And this year, he failed to meet Hakainde Hichilema under the Church-led dialogue process. So when he is still calling for a meeting, we hope that this time around he's ready and serious about the meeting.
But you understand supporters of the ruling party displeased with the president's olive branch gesture to meet Hakainde Hichilema, particularly when the opposition has been criticizing everything and sometimes opposing and sometimes trying to undermine the peace and stability in Zambia. Their words, not mine. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, it is not true that Hakainde Hichilema is undermining the peace and stability in this country. What we are trying to do and what Hakainde Hichilema does is to provide necessary checks and balances to this government. This time around, for example, the PF government led by Edgar Lungu is trying to make amendments to the Republican Constitution without consultation. We're trying to introduce new laws, new amendments to the Electoral Act, as well as the Public Order Act. All of them are contentious issues in Zambia and were done without proper consultation. Just last week, those amendments failed in Parliament.
What do you anticipate to be the outcome or expectations of this dialogue between the president and Hakainde Hichilema?
Well, basically, we are saying that Zambians have lost their freedom, their liberty, and therefore they need to restore their freedom, they need to restore their human rights. After that is done, then we need for this country to go back to the rule of law. Basically, we have lost that direction and heading towards dictatorship. So that needs to be corrected. And then we look at the other socio-economic factors. The political violence that is going on in this country, the corruption that is taking place. We have a list of more than 15 items that need to be discussed before we go to the next election. If these are not resolved, we will not see how this country can deliver a free, fair and credible election.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. Zimbabwe Vice President Constantino Chiwenga is receiving treatment in China for an undisclosed illness, according to the office of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. In a statement released to the media, presidential spokesman George Charamba says Chiwenga, who was undergoing treatment in South Africa, left for China this week and is set to undergo further medical tests. The former army chief, credited for orchestrating the removal of former President Robert Mugabe from power, had also sought treatment in India. Enoje Muntodi is Zimbabwe's deputy information minister.
In our new policy as a government, we are following a policy of transparency, and we want to be accountable to the people of Zimbabwe, especially for officials who occupy high offices of government. It is very important for people not to speculate as to what will be happening around a person of a vice president or the highest offices on the land. So we don't want that speculation. We want newspapers or media houses to report accurately about what would be happening. So this is the reason why the deputy chief secretary in charge of presidential communication had to come up with that statement to inform the nation that the vice president, Honorable Chiwenga, who has been in South Africa receiving medical treatment, will now be transferred to China. This is a noble thing that we commend that office has done, and to ensure that everyone is enlightened and everyone gets to know what's happening around the vice president.
But what can you tell us about the state of his health apart from what Mr. Charamba has said?
This is something that has been stated in black and white with regard to his condition, and we are very much confident that what has been said is enough, or it suffices everyone who has any question about what's happening around the vice president. We hope that the office of the president and cabinet will also continue to update the nation as to what will be happening around the vice president. But as of now, we believe that the statement that has been given is enough to inform the nation and to satisfy whatever inquiries have been coming in relation to the absence of the vice president. In carrying out his duties, be it in cabinet, be it in parliament, or wherever, we believe that what has been said is enough to really answer any queries that have been coming.
Lastly, some government critics are saying that it does not look good for the vice president to seek medical attention in South Africa, India, or China. Why not get treatment in Zimbabwe like anybody else?
Definitely. Since our attainment of independence, we've seen that our pace of development in terms of health care facilities has been very slow, in line with the growing population and also the growing new technologies that are being invented worldwide.
Energy Muthodi is Zimbabwe's Deputy Minister of Information. He spoke with Blessing Zulu of the Zimbabwe Service. An African Union special envoy who is on a five-day visit to South Sudan is calling on the country's leaders to end sexual violence. Aya Chebi, the AU special envoy on youth, says authorities must involve men if South Sudan is to end gender-based violence. Ornette Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
AU Special Envoy Aya Chebi says South Sudanese must stop stigmatizing women as victims and men as perpetrators of sexual violence. And she tells South Sudan in Focus that South Sudanese leaders and rights activists must involve men if they want to see real change take place.
Men should be doing all these initiatives to end gender-based violence. Why? Because these women are their mothers, their sisters, their daughters. They're not some women out there who is suffering and I don't care about. These are their communities. So if it's not my daughter today, it's going to be my daughter tomorrow. Violence will knock her door tomorrow.
Chebi says the African Union's action plan for ending gender-based violence focuses on ending all forms of violence, including genital mutilation and child marriage. South Sudanese communities must think about women as an integral part of society by empowering them in all sectors through peace-building efforts that promote social cohesion, according to Chebi. She says rights advocates should promote strong laws that punish the perpetrators of sexual violence, noting that survivors of attacks are unlikely to speak up unless there are laws against sexual violence are enforced.
So I call on civil society to advocate for legal frameworks that protect women. For the communities, there is also resilience and community. Even in violent extremism, they call it community policing, which means the community protects itself. And I think that's important. And again, men are part of it. So if someone is abusing another woman, men should stand up and say, that is not acceptable.
Simon Marot Tonlong, a member of the African Union's Youth Advisory Council, says preventing sexual violence begins at home.
How will you feel if your sister, if your daughter or your mother undergoes such kind of lot of troubling experiences? It is sad. So it will start from families. It will not come from outside. It will not be organizations. It will not be the government. It will not be institutions. It has to be individuals. And it has to start from families for us to all be advocates.
Marot says AU member states, including South Sudan, must ratify all AU policies that protect all citizens, including women. And it is the duty of every citizen to hold the government of South Sudan accountable for enforcing those policies. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
African airline flyers are urging African governments to implement the Yamoussoukro decision adopted in 1999 by the African Union to allow for open skies among most African countries. They say protectionism makes them the first victims. The airline flyers made the call during a two-day African Union Commission for Civil Aviation workshop in Rwanda's capital, Kigali. Eugene Uwimana has details.
It is still compulsory for African airline passengers going from east to west of the continent to pass through Europe before reaching their destinations. African passengers say this long route and other problems persist because African governments do not effectively implement the Yamoussoukro decision, which was adopted to liberalize the aviation market and protect airline consumers on the continent. Stephen Mutoro is from Kenya.
The problem has been man-made, I would say. So it's just about competition. I think we need to open up the African aviation market. Protectionism will not work. Locking out somebody, say, look, you cannot come to West Africa, Senegal, wherever, unless you go to a European country. I mean, that is just making it very difficult for people to come. And in the long run, they're actually the victims because you kill even tourism.
Stephen says this monopoly of African airlines badly hurts consumers' rights.
Like flight delays. And if you, as a consumer, you delay to get to the airport, you either penalize or you lose the ticket. So we want to see a fairness. Because on many occasions, we've seen airlines punishing the consumer very heavily. But then there's no mechanism of also punishing indisciplined airlines. And we want to see a balance between those two.
The African Union Commission for Civil Aviation says these problems are being debated, but mainly encouraging African countries to implement the Yamoussoukro decision. Angeline Simana is the director of air transport in the commission.
The reason why we had this workshop is because now that we have got states and heads of states that have made a very clarion call as to where they see Africa's destiny to be, being part of the implementation of SANTAM is to really ensure that we build the momentum, we assist states, and we make sure that the single air transport market is implemented.
Experts say the fact that some African countries are still moving slowly in opening the skies keep African airlines smaller and fragmented. According to statistics from the International Air Transport Association, IATA, the African aviation industry is projected to register a loss of about $300 million. Ambassador Clever Gatete, Rwanda's Minister of Infrastructure, says Rwanda has been implementing all instruments of the Yamoussoukro decision and is working to convince other countries.
Rwanda has fulfilled all the requirements that are there. All the laws have been put in place, all the technicalities that needs to be done in order to allow the bilateral air service agreements to be implemented. We have to work with other countries to make sure that they also fulfill all the requirements.
The Yamoussoukro decision was first adopted in 1999 to open the skies over Africa. However, several countries have delayed its implementation. During the 30th Africa Union Ordinary Summit held last year in Addis Ababa, heads of state adopted some instruments of the Yamoussoukro decision, including competition rules, consumer protection, and dispute settlement mechanism. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Kenya's Finance Minister Henry Rotich, his Permanent Secretary Kamau Thogi, and 10 other government officials are said to be arraigned in court today, Tuesday, for alleged corruption and fraud related to a multi-million dollar project to build two dams. Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development, UPND, says it welcomes President Edgar Lungu's willingness to meet with UPND leader Hakainde Hichilema. Local media reports quoted the president as saying he is ready to meet with the main opposition leader. Hichilema said he is also prepared to meet with the president without preconditions. Zimbabwe Vice President Constantino Chiwenga is receiving treatment in China for an undisclosed illness, according to the office of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. In a statement released to the media, presidential spokesman George Charamba said Chiwenga, who is undergoing treatment in South Africa, left for China this week. And that's it for this Tuesday, July 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts covering Africa and the world news. tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.